This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Fiona. Now, our next guest is Simon Royal. Simon is a journalist. And we're going to talk about, a lot of people think gay law reform started in Melbourne. It didn't actually. It really got off the ground in Adelaide in the early 70s. And in particular, around some really awful gay hate crimes that took part in Adelaide. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Now, this was around the Torrens River, wasn't it, some of these crimes?
Yes. It was a well-known beat back in the early 70s, and it was also known that it received a lot of attention from the South Australian Police Vice Squad. The most standout of the crimes, if I can put it that way, was the drowning of law lecturer Dr. George Duncan, right, who'd only been in Adelaide 6 weeks. He'd come over from the UK to take up a job at the University of Adelaide teaching law. He'd gone down to the Torrens on the night of May 10th, 1972, where he was assaulted. He and another man named Roger James, and indeed yet another man, were thrown into the river, and George Duncan drowned. And what came after that was perhaps the worst scandal in the history of the South Australian Police Force, because very quickly stories started to spread that three Vice Squad officers were suspected of having thrown Duncan in. There was an inquest held by the coroner, which failed to find the identity of the three people or the alleged assailants. And then years later, in the mid-1980s, three were charged. One was found not to have had a case to answer, and the other two went to trial for Duncan's manslaughter and were acquitted in 1988. So Duncan's, the identity of his assailants remains a mystery.
And, you know, in the history of the South Australian Police Force, it's not a very good history, we have to be honest about. In common with police forces around Australia, until quite recently, and there's still a hell of a lot of work to do. So in terms of law reform, Simon, South Australia was always regarded, as a state that had a bit of a different attitude to law reform.
Yes.
Probably because certainly the politics in South Australia had always been a bit strange. I think they still are. But that, because it was a free settler state rather than a convict state, there was a different attitude. How did the law reform...
To some extent, I mean, there's been a long history of the LCL, Liberal Country League government, under Sir Tom Playford.
Yeah.
He was, I think he remains the longest serving premier anywhere in the Commonwealth, 26 years.
Yeah.
He had what was called a playmander, a gerrymander, perhaps one of the worst ones in Australian history. Even Joe Bielke-Peterson would have blushed to have had one like we had here. But it was also, quite a paternalistic time as well. But by the mid-60s, things had started to change. Labor won power in I think, 65, 66, lost again in the late 60s. Then the Liberal government changed those rules to give us a fairer electoral boundary system. And then the Dunstan decade started in the early 70s. But funnily enough, the first bill that came out of Duncan's drowning, I mean, it's hard to imagine the shock in this small city that this event caused. People were profoundly shocked and profoundly disappointed. It was a Liberal MLC member of the upper house, Murray Hill, whose son Robert Hill actually went on to become a defence minister in the mid-1980s. Murray Hill drafted the first piece of legislation to decriminalise homosexual acts in private. Now, that ended up ultimately being defeated, and then by 1975 there was another bill which was passed by, you know, obviously both houses and so on, through the Dunstan government. Again, I think from memory it was a private member's bill. But what we got out of that was, this was the first jurisdiction in Australia to successfully decriminalise homosexuality, and we got a bill that was unique in the English-speaking world in as much that it embraced absolute equality. Same age of consent, same rules applied to everyone. And that hadn't been seen. You know, we weren't the first jurisdiction in the Anglosphere to have decriminalised male homosexuality. But we were certainly the most progressive when we finally got that piece of legislation in 1975.
And it's interesting, you know, to look back at the environment that this happened in. You know, Don Dunstan, you know, was a very flamboyant premier and, you know, really set the scene in terms of some of this law reform, but not just in the areas of the LGBTI community, but in other areas too. Do you think, you know, South Australia, why do you think there was such shock at what had happened to Professor Duncan? Why do you think there was such shock?
Because people trusted in the police force.
Right.
People didn't expect that sort of thing to have happened. Everyone knew what was going on the Torrens. And indeed, there were, you know, other cases of people going into the river, being thrown into the river or turning up drowned in the river and so on, so much so that it was seen as quite a commonplace event. People used to swim in the river those days. I mean, it's sort of, one should always look on the bright side of things. You know, one healthy aspect of the River Torrens being so polluted these days is that no one swims in the damn thing.
Yeah.
So no one drowns.
You
know, it was just such a different time in that sense. But people knew what was going on there. There were, you know, Duncan also had the might of the University of Adelaide Law School behind him.
Yes.
And in those days, academics occupied a much more exalted position in our community. And the law school really pushed hard for a resolution to his case. And indeed, today continues to keep Duncan's memory alive. It has a scholarship in his name for LGBTQI students. And a range of other things. But, you know, as other historians, you know, particularly Tim Reeves, have pointed out, you know, Duncan is an unlikely, every cause needs its martyr, if I can put it that way. Now, he'd have been profoundly embarrassed. He certainly wasn't out. He was a closeted gay man. He's not a Rosa Parks. He didn't jump, he was pushed. But that said, what happened to him was a terrible injustice. But, you know, the justice system in the end did, you know, he's not the first victim of crime that hasn't had a conviction. And he certainly, unfortunately, won't be the last. But I don't think you can say the justice system, it failed him. That's a different thing to saying the justice system failed, if I'm making my point clear. As one sort of senior legal figure said to me, few months ago, it's a pretty simple case. It comes down to identity. No one can stand up in court, point across the room and say, I saw him throw Duncan in. And that's what it hinges upon.
You know, I went to, just Fiona has a question which I'll let her get to, but I remember going to an industrial democracy conference in Adelaide in the 70s.
Yep. And you never hear that term anymore. I mean,
industrial democracy.
Well, it was about, you know, union or worker representation on boards. And one of the speakers was Clive Jenkins, English unionist. But this was a conference sponsored by the South Australian government and the South Australian Attorney General at the time, who I think his name was also Duncan, Peter Duncan. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, anyway,
yep.
Very progressive reform agenda there.
Yes, absolutely. The thing that sticks out to me, though, was how, you know, as I said, the horror at what had happened to Duncan spread across the political divide. You know, you had your old reprobates, if I can put it that way, in the upper house who stymied it. I mean, in South Australia in those days, the upper house, and you know, when I'm not talking ancient history, it's 50 years ago, but, you know, maybe that's an indication that one is heading on towards ancient oneself. But there was still a land clause, and by that I mean you had to own land in order to be eligible to sit in the upper house, which is, you know, somewhat medieval. So that wasn't changed until sometime later on. But the point of it is that you had people across the divide who looked at this and thought, we need to change. And the one of the things that really sticks out to me is this editorial that the Adelaide Advertiser wrote July the 1st, 1972. It's in the middle of the inquiry into Duncan, the inquest into Duncan. There's been headline after headline of violence and claims that about the vice squad. Just as I said, this, you know, the reputation of the police force was being drenched in stuff even muckier than you find in the Torrens. And then in the middle of that, the Adelaide Advertiser comes out with this editorial which says, there can be no reason that anyone could be offended by homosexual acts in private. It said the state has no business in its citizens' rooms, bedrooms. It said that this law is causing tragedy and heartache, and that the sooner the state is out of its citizens' bedrooms, the better. Now, that was an extraordinarily progressive piece of journalism. And you contrast it to what happened 6 years later with the first Mardi Gras in Sydney, where people were arrested. And you were a 78er, weren't you?
I still am. I haven't fallen off the perch yet. Not unless I'm speaking from the other place. But yes.
Well, just watch your back, you know.
Don't worry. There's a long queue.
But so, with all of these people who were arrested, the Sydney Morning Herald published their names and occupations, which is, it takes your breath away, which is just as well, because I'd probably use it to explode a word which isn't appropriate for broadcast. And they finally apologised for it in 2016 and invoked the Nuremberg defence, which, you know, everyone was doing it at that point in time. No, they weren't. as part of the work that I've done on this, I came across a couple of guys who were arrested. This was the same year as Duncan, 1972, in Adelaide's northern suburbs. At Elizabeth, they were arrested in a public toilet. And the Advertiser did not publish their names. It did not publish their occupations. It published their ages. And they were most fascinated by the fact that these were married men having sex with other men. Who'd have thought? I'm telling you this story just to underscore how this was an idea whose time had come. And I don't mean by that, you know, all of a sudden there was this wonderful nirvana. We had HIV/AIDS and then the family murders, so-called family murders in South Australia hit during the 1980s. Yes. And that was a long, hard slog for everyone. But the sense of injustice and the sense that fundamentally the law had caused this to happen. The law was the ultimate culprit for what had happened to Dr. Duncan and indeed everyone else, because it made gay men, by virtue of who and what they are, criminals and second class. And the law set the tone for violence that unfolded not just on the banks of the Torrens, but every other beat in the country.
Bevan Spencer von Einem, he's still in jail, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He was the fellow, by the way, who
The family matters for those.
Roger, yeah, that's right. But he also was the fellow who took Roger James, who was the other man thrown into the river the night that Duncan died. He took him to the Royal Adelaide Hospital in sort of one of those odd coincidences. Mm. And Roger's view of it, and this was actually well known, it was reported at the time before the murders had started happening. So in the early 1970s, it was reported at Duncan's during the Duncan trial, reported again when Von Arnim was trial. So there's nothing sort of essentially new in that. But when the Scotland Yard report into the Duncan affair was finally tabled in the South Australian Parliament in 2002, it mentions Von Arnim's name in there, and of course that sort of set off a flurry of other reporting. And I spoke to Roger James, has given a handful, if any, interviews about this, and he gave one to the ABC back then. And I'd asked him what he made of Von Arnim being the one who plucked him out of the river, and it was basically, well, you can't always choose who rescues you.
Yes.
But also very pithy and to the point. He said, well, who else would have it been? He lived there. Roger, I think, is...
Yes.
He is the other victim in all of this, I think. But I think his great success has been that he refuses to be defined as a victim of the Duncan affair. If that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
It does. And,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people, Simon, don't understand the history of this, and also, you know, Adelaide does have a history, or South Australia does have a history of some really weird goings on. Not just in our community, you know, there was the barrels in the bank, and what was the name of that town?
Snowtown.
I kept thinking border town.
As an Adelaidean, as a journalist, I mean, I suppose as a matter of principle, I'll take exception to that. But, I mean, what else are you going to do with old barrels and a disused bank vault? But, as for weird murders, well, show me a normal one. I do get the point that you're making. You know, there is a certain... it becomes a sense of risk and so on, which is a little overblown. You know, people think that Adelaide is, you're not more likely to end up a victim of a serial killer here. It's just unfortunate that we've had a few sort of sensational ones.
Now, I want to
there's an Oscar Wilde quote coming here, I'm sure. But
I want to change tack quickly.
Sure.
Who's going to win the South Australian election? What do you reckon? And where is the Deputy Premier? He's gone missing. He hasn't been thrown in the Torrens, has he?
No. I will be reporting for the ABC on election night, so I will tread carefully in all of this.
You weren't expecting that, were you?
No, I just sort of wanted to gather my thoughts for a second. Look, it's not clear at this point in time. I'll say this. It's tighter than you would expect it to be. The Liberals have been in power for one term. Stephen Marshall has, in some sense, has done a very good job, and he was well supported for his management of the COVID crisis up until we decided to open the borders at the end of November, beginning of December. That's changed things. Whether it's changed enough for Labor to have a look in, I don't know. But Labor is more competitive than they should be by rights. They had been in power for 16 years beforehand. And the Liberals have also, there's been a couple of scandals in terms of, essentially, the country members' allowance of people claiming allowances that they weren't due to. And as we often see with Liberal governments in this state, when we have them, and I'll come back to that point in a second, a number of defections onto the crossbenches as independents. And a couple of those people are more likely than not to support Labor, should Labor get to that point where it's a hung parliament. Labor has a history of doing deals in this state with conservative independents, and conservative independents have a history of doing deals with Labor. If this might sound like a strange thing, but if Labor loses, it will be less devastating for them than it is for the government. I am heading next birthday. There is a significant birthday which has a six in it. There has been one two-term Liberal government in my lifetime in this state, South Australian state Liberal government, where the Liberal Party has won, as I said, two consecutive terms in government. And that was with different premiers. There has been no Liberal premier in my lifetime, the same person, to have won two elections. Not one. So if they do not win, it will be a devastating loss for them, far more so than Labor. And I spent a lot of time not answering your question, didn't I?
Look, I do follow what's going on there. I do think, you know, the last time Labor won, they did it on the basis of some very cunning campaigning in marginal seats. And
oh, yeah. And Labor in this state is the master of marginal seat campaigning.
Yeah. But I do also, you know, a lot of the independent members of the South Australian Parliament, you're right, if you wanted to put money on which way they were going to fall in a close election, you'd do your dough. But again, it's the interesting fact of the environment that's created law reform in so many areas in South Australia, but the political environment, and don't take this the wrong way, I always think the South Australian Parliament's a bit like the Ballarat Council. You know,
that's a bit mean, Mac.
And I don't mean anything against Ballarat or Adelaide, but you know, whenever I've been to Adelaide, I've just that's me backpedalling at 100 miles an hour.
Simon, it's been great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Fiona.
You know, just for our listeners, if they're interested in the story of George Duncan, and also there's another story which Simon has written about the boy who didn't matter, which we were going to touch on today. Which
was like the premier who didn't matter?
No. A terrible murder that happened before George Duncan. Listeners, you can go on to a website, In Daily, and read Simon's stories there, which
there
is an independent Adelaide news article website. Thank you, Simon.
Very good too.
We appreciate it.
And thank
your
you much, Simon. Don't take any
story
of this personally. I love Adelaide.
No, that's perfectly all right. I'm used to this sort of thing. I would not be visiting Ballarat if I were you for a while.
Okay. Cheers.
They've got the pitchforks and the car, torches. They're being lit as we speak.
Oh, yeah.
And, rattling
and pictures of me are being circulated.
Yes.
Thank you, Simon, for your
dead
time.
Or alive.
Thanks very much,
thanks.
Simon.
Have a great weekend.
It was great to talk to you.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.